Bone-chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of the lovely Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow. So before we dive into this episode, I do have a little sad update. So last week, I had briefly talked about the Colorado Gator Reptile Establishment that is located in Colorado. And this was right after I talked about the killer croc. So the day that I recorded that episode, unbeknownst to me, of course, Morris, the movie star alligator, did die. You may recognize him from Happy Gilmore, Dr. Dolittle 2, Interview with a Vampire, and so much more. He had been in Colorado for almost 20 years at his retirement home, as I call it, and they believed him to be between, at the time of his death, 80 to 90 years old. They don't know exactly, but in his 20 years, he'd only grown a couple of inches, and so he was pretty old already. And to these people, he was like a family member to them. And so my thoughts and prayers go out to Colorado Gator family. They are actually going to have him stuffed. They're taxidermying it up. So in their words, he will continue to scare children forever. And I think that's a really smart move on their part for sure. And I know that every time I go, I always make a beeline to go see Morris. I see everything else and I enjoy everything else, but it was always so cool seeing Morris. Like, I love Happy Gilmore. It's one of my favorite movies. And so anyways, I'm glad that he'll still be there being able to greet people as that is his home. I also want to quickly say big, big, big happy birthday to my grandpa Ernie. He is not the one that I read about, but he was also in World War II. He was a medic and he saw a lot, did a lot, and he's just amazing. He's active. He still does karaoke, and he goes out. Decades ago, used to own not only a bowling alley, but a men's clothing store. So I don't care if it's the hottest day in Arizona. He is dressed in a suit. He's just amazing. So 101 years old today. Grandpa, you're an inspiration. So today we find ourselves in Pensacola Bay, Florida. Just a stone's throw away, really, from Sherman Field and Naval Air Station, Pensacola. And here resides the Pensacola Lighthouse. And she does stand mighty tall and proud. Originally built in 1825, what would be the first lighthouse was a 40-foot tower, and it was located on a 40-foot bluff. But this was proven not to be very helpful, as oftentimes trees covered part of the what should have been considered a life-saving tool. And there were complaints that the, you know, light wasn't bright enough, that it was kind of on the dimmer side. And again, this is supposed to be a life-saving thing. So you need to go all the way, right? And so in 1858, a brand spanking new tower is constructed, replacing the original. Where the first one was located at the south entrance, this new one is on the north end. And this one was much taller. Like the first, it was also on a 40-foot bluff, but it stood at 150 feet, making it 190 feet with its being perched on top of that ever so glorious bluff. Now, the tower stands at around 15 stories high, and it has 177 steps. And I love lighthouses and the history and lore and legends that come with them. As much as I enjoy them, I hate to admit this, but living part-time in North Carolina, where there's dozens scattered all throughout the state, and once living in California, and again, just how many lighthouses are in California, for several years, I hate to admit that I've never seen a lighthouse in person. Well, I can't say never. I saw one, and that was Cape Henry in Virginia. And it was just so beautiful. It was really gorgeous. That day we saw dolphins in the water at Virginia Beach, and it was just like a really epic day. And I remember walking up those steps in the lighthouse, and it was a really cool feeling. And I couldn't help but close my eyes and just try to picture the lighthouse keepers walking up those very same steps ever so long ago. Upon arrival, a plaque welcomes visitors, giving a little information about the lighthouse. And it reads this, Pensacola Lighthouse, Construction began in 1856 and was lit 1859 and is still in use at the present time. This lighthouse replaced the original lighthouse built in 1824, the first lighthouse of the Gulf Coast. In 1879, a new Front Range beacon is constructed 448 feet southeast of the lighthouse, and this was known as the Pensacola Bar Beacon. It was a small wooden tower that was 55 feet above the water, but this would sadly not stay too terribly long for the party, as it would be demolished sometime in the early 1900s. There are existing pictures of it, though, and it looks like it was a really neat building. It's a shame that it no longer is standing. Good times are rolling in 1939 as electricity is introduced to Pensacola Lighthouse. And this obviously proves to be extremely useful, as before this happened, it was required that the lighthouse keeper or an assistant to the lighthouse keeper rewind the light rotation clockworks every 4.5 hours. Talk about a pain in the ass task, right? And it's not like, oh, if I forget to do it, whatever. No. Again, life-saving. And in 1965, the light is finally automated. It finds itself a place in the National Register of Historic Places back in 1974. And today, as mentioned in the plaque, this lighthouse remains an active one. And it's open to the public to conduct tours, I believe 7 days a week. So if you are in or around the area, or if you're just planning a trip and looking for places to check out, I would sincerely recommend checking out this fabulous location. I really do love when places like this are open to the public. I love just going and picturing how it was back then, and I love learning about all the history and everything. It's just, I love it. Civil War history is deeply drenched into the Pensacola Lighthouse. At the beginning of the war, the Confederates had total control over Pensacola. They removed the lighthouse lens and other important things from the lighthouse as well, and basically took control of the lighthouse. And in late 1861, an unfortunate nearby artillery duel between the Union and Confederate resulted in the lighthouse being partially damaged. Eventually, the Confederates, they are pushed out of Pensacola, and with the Union now taking over, the lighthouse is finally relit, as it should have been this whole time, with a Fresnel lens in 1962. And 6 years later, the lighthouse would get a facelift, and it would be replaced with a new First Order lens. So, there was a woman who I believe was a lighthouse keeper's wife, and her name was Ellen Mueller. And man and wife lived here together in the tower, and everything was great. The couple could not have been happier. Just when they thought things couldn't get any happier, better, or brighter, they find out that Ellen is pregnant. They were over the moon ecstatic. Unfortunately, tragedy strikes, and she dies while giving birth to the baby. It was because of blood loss. And this happened back in 1911. And speaking of death, there's a rumor that two runaway slaves were captured and hanged here in the basement, then unceremoniously buried on the property. Not sure how much truth there is to that, but again, stories, legends, tells, they're all part of this. Pensacola Lighthouse is believed to be very haunted, home to several resident spirits. The basement definitely has some paranormal activity and many connected to the two runaway slaves that were supposedly killed here. WKRG.com goes into more detail about some of the haunts that take place here. Quote, "In the stairwell and on the top of the tower, many people have seen or felt a man named Samuel Lawrence, who became head keeper in 1877. Booth said others show up here too," unquote. The same article talks about some things that was shared by the night tour coordinator, a gentleman named Rob Booth, and I want to read a little bit more about what he had to say. Quote, "Booth said they communicate a lot with two children, Lizzie and Joey, who died from yellow fever in 1922. He says they wander all over the lighthouse property and will travel through visitors, causing a fright. People will stand in the doorways downstairs, and the kids will run through the house and run right through them. And we watch people get the willies, and we kind of snicker because we know what's happening. Unquote. Meanwhile, hauntedus.com discusses other haunts, and we hear mention of Samuel once more. Quote, tells of hauntings at the Pensacola Lighthouse have hung around for decades, but achieved heightened public interest as tours of the building became more common. One well-known spirit is that of Samuel, a spirit said to reside high up into the tower. Visitors frequently report seeing his apparition in the windows up at the lighthouse's peak, and women who have traveled up there report being touched and grabbed by the handsy entity. A room in the keeper's quarters is also said to be haunted by the ghost of a little girl. The bedroom in question was the place where a woman once died during childbirth. This bedroom is now famously known as the Bloody Bedroom. The little girl's spirit is known to play in that bedroom and can frequently be heard and seen frolicking around the room. The spirit of a woman reportedly roams the halls of the keeper's house and is commonly spotted by visitors. The story goes that this is the spirit of Michaela Ingraham, the wife of one of the first lighthouse keepers, who died shortly after the construction of the original lighthouse. Along with that being seen, Michaela is known to throw objects around the keeper's house and call out people's names while they're touring the building. Unquote. So, I mean, this is pretty fantastic. There's a lot going on here at Pensacola Lighthouse, and we're just getting started. First of all, going back to Samuel, who is very hands-on, literally touching the guests and staff, definitely a fan of the ladies. Then you have these two sweet little children who, bless their souls, died a horrible death due to yellow fever and running through the living. And now we have Michaela, who is known to get physical as well, throwing items around, calling people's names out. And I've said this before and I'm saying it again, damn it. It is really a neat feeling when you are investigating somewhere, you're on site, and especially when you've never been there before, and you capture the voice of a spirit saying your name. I mean, it's just phenomenal. Now, this will not be the last time that you hear me talk about Michaela Ingraham, as she will make an appearance in just a few moments.
Isn't the suspense killing you?
I found a neat article from midnightghostlights.com, and I want to read a little part of that right now. Quote, one story that comes up again and again among night staff is the man at the top of the tower. He's seen only occasionally, always at night, standing just behind the last step before the lantern room. He doesn't speak. He doesn't move. But people who see him describe the same things. Dark uniform, older man, eyes that watch too closely. A former Coast Guard technician named Anthony R., who worked on light maintenance during the early 2000s, told a friend of mine this chilling memory. He said this, we were doing a checkup after Hurricane Ivan. I was up there alone, cleaning glass, when I felt something behind me. I turned, there was no one, but the smell hit me. Pipe smoke, the old kind. The hairs on my neck went up, and I heard a voice say, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here. Clear as day, I left the tools behind and walked down all 177 steps without stopping once. Unquote. Guests and staff have seen apparitions roaming about. People have captured recordings of some amazing EVPs as well. Also experienced here are people's cameras that suddenly just malfunction, and that's always annoying if I do say so myself. And they also hear disembodied voices and filling cold spots. That's always a fun thing, filling those cold spots or hot spots. They hear disembodied footsteps, doors slamming on their own accord, and as mentioned before, that lovely phantom smell of old pipe smoke. that is often smelled upstairs. The Pensacola Lighthouse was featured on an episode on the Travel Channel all about the most haunted lighthouses. Legend has it, story goes that lighthouse keeper Jeremiah Ingraham's wife, Michaela, was brutally murdered here at the lighthouse. The identity of her killer is unknown, but some believe it to be her own husband who was responsible. It wouldn't be the first time nor the last time that a spouse would be responsible for such a heinous crime against somebody that they supposedly loved. In fact, sadly, it's all too common today. You know how legends sometimes get switched around and little twists here and there and discrepancies and whatever. Well, I saw a different version of the legend on the postsearchlight.com, and I want to read part of that right now. And before I do, what's interesting about this version is that the murder victim is not Michaela, but it's the lighthouse keeper Jeremiah Ingraham himself. The article talks about how the couple would often argue a lot of the times. It had to do with the cleanliness of the lighthouse. And again, they're talking about a legend, you know? So there's no proof any of this ever really happened. But supposedly, Michaela was a neat freak, demanded it stay as clean as possible, like military structural firmness, stern to the very utmost. Jeremiah was not having it whatsoever. He was a busy man. He had things to do. The last thing he had time to do was put the maid outfit on and do some tidying up. So I'm going to read that article right now, or part of it. Quote, "No one saw much of the couple together. Jeremiah would come to town for supplies, usually alone. Then in 1840, Jeremiah died. No one knew exactly when or how this happened. Some believed he simply became ill. However, there were those who believed he passed from this life in a more sinister way. They thought that Michaela murdered him. After all, they were alone in the tower most of the time. Jeremiah had mentioned some very strong arguments over the tower. Now, after investigating, it was believed that Michaela became enraged with her husband during one of their frequent arguments. She grabbed a large butcher knife and pushed the blade deep into her husband's chest. As a consequence, a large bloodstain was left on the pine floor of this room. Also, a blood trail was seen going into several of the other rooms. This is an intriguing theory, especially considering the fact that after her husband's death, Michaela took over as keeper and was keeper until 1855. Michaela said that it was an intruder, that she was frightened and she hid, and she felt that Jeremiah could handle the situation. In modern times, when the lighthouse was being redone, the many layers of tile were removed down to the original wooden floors. A large stain that looked like blood was discovered in one room, and so was the legendary blood trail. No amount of scrubbing removed the stain, and when tested, it was blood. For those who had always suspected Michaela Ingraham murdered her husband, this was evidence enough." Unquote. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, if this was true, obviously, so like if they found his body, and if he was in fact murdered, they're saying that finding that blood trail was proof that Michaela did it, but she said that it was, if this, you know, she supposedly said that it was an intruder. So unless they found the butcher knife with her fingerprints all over it, I mean, and maybe a little bit of her blood, I just don't get it. What is known is that he did die. He was the first lighthouse keeper here at Pensacola Lighthouse, and he did die shortly after it was open for business. No mention of murder really anywhere besides the few little tells I saw. I did look up more about Jeremiah Ingraham, facts, not legends, and I quote PensacolaLighthouse.org themselves. Quote, "The new tower was first lit on December 20th, 1824, by bachelor Jeremiah Ingraham. To produce a flashing signature, two groups of five lamps were fastened to opposite ends of a framework, which was rotated by a clockwork system. After 2 years at the post, Ingraham married Michaela Penelber, of Pensacola. Together they managed the light and raised three children at the station. When Jeremiah passed away in 1840, Michaela took over responsibility for the light. In the late 1840s, the clockwork mechanism failed, and two men were hired to rotate the lamps by hand until repairs were made. Michaela served until her own death in 1855, when her son-in-law, Joseph Palms, was hired as the keeper, unquote. So again, I'm kind of taking this legend, and I love legends, don't get me wrong, but I'm taking that with a grain of salt. I think that life happens, and if you're murdered, there's some sort of like evidence or proof about that. And, you know, passed away. He could have died from a heart attack. I who knows? But anyways, again, you gotta love legends, right? From phantom smells to being touched by a spirit and so much more. This location is plumb full and does not lack in the slightest when it comes to paranormal activity. Just another location to add to the old bucket list, my friends. Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to lose sleep over it. Just hit up any of those amazing podcast platforms right now, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Pocket Cast, Blueberry. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.